Happy Tuesday. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, as you know, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here with you in just about 15 minutes. We'll talk to DJ Shefty Sheft, our NFL insider, Adam Schefter. How closely is the NFL looking at what happened with the Marlins over the weekend, and is there anything they are doing and can take from what Major League Baseball did or didn't do and try and apply it to football as training camps and rookies begin to report this week?
Yeah, and I still think the biggest thing they can do right out of the gate, Mike, you brought it up before, was everyday testing. Just scrap the 5% or over and just know we got to test every day.
And you've built that into your model. Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's doctor, the chief of health and safety, came out and said this is going to be a living, breathing thing. And so you can update it. This doesn't need to be a pride thing, because that's kind of what it felt like with Rob Manfred is, no, what we've put in place is enough. Well, you just said you have to go above and beyond. There's no shame in adjusting to what this virus tells you.
As Herm Edwards said, any plan that can't be changed is a bad plan.
Yep.
So you have to be able to adapt. By the way, we're hoping to have Dr. Sills on the show tomorrow. So we'll look forward to that and see if we can push that one over the goal line. We are also awaiting the potential test results during the morning for the Philadelphia Phillies, who took the field with the Marlins on Sunday when the Marlins decided to play as a collective unit when they weren't, should not have been the ones that have made that decision after they had at least four players test positive. It turns out they had, up to 11 players
they
test
was,
positive?
It was 11 players, two coaches.
Yeah, 13 total.
So we're waiting for that information as well. And again, this is because Major League Baseball is doing the thing that the NBA and the WNBA are not doing, and they are playing inside a bubble, and they have to travel and do all that kind of stuff. And that is the biggest issue with baseball, because they're traveling multiple cities multiple times a week. Meanwhile, the bubble situations, whether it's the NHL, as you brought up, Junior, are doing very well with their testing. The NBA, WNBA, MLS also doing all very well inside that bubble testing. And time for one of our NBA status updates now. Tim McMahon with us about the Rockets and what's going on with them.
Golic and Wingo, NBA status update. Houston Rockets.
This is Tim McMahon, an NBA reporter based in Texas, where the Rockets look like they'll run on fumes when the NBA season was suspended. Rockets now are ready to reignite the league's great small ball experiment. They've got a full deck with the exception of Thabo Sefolosha. He opted out of the NBA's restart. That wasn't a huge loss considering he'd been at DNTCD in seven of the previous nine games. I think more importantly, James Harden has fresh legs. P.J. Tucker has fresh legs. Harden obviously carries as big an offensive burden as anybody in the league. But with the Rockets playing 6'7" or less, it's Tucker who's the key to their defense. It's 6'5", by far the shortest starting center in the NBA. And again, he looked like he might have been out of gas when the season was suspended. He's got a full tank now. The hope for the Rockets, they still think it's a potential title team. It's certainly a championship or bust mentality for Houston. The hope is that both of their recent MVPs can perform at that level. If James Harden can look the way that he started the season and Russell Westbrook performed the way he did midway through, if those guys are both hot and playing at their peak, the Rockets feel like anything's possible.
Tim, thank you very much. By the way, this is an amazing number. James Harden can go scoreless through each of the next eight games that they'll play to end the regular season and still average 30.4 points per game for the season. Stats Incredible is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life.
Well, the one thing we're going to get out of Houston, as you heard that right in the beginning, is a team that was gassed when the season went on hiatus. So they certainly have had time to recover. So what kind of a run, now a not-as-tired team, small ballish type situation, can they make? And again, there's no home court to worry about in seeding for the last eight games, but it is about opponents you're going to play. And looking at it right now from the three slot with the Denver Nuggets at seven games back from the top of the division, where Houston is in the sixth slot, 9.5 back. So 2.5 games separating in between there is Utah and the Oklahoma City Thunder. So 3, 4, 5, and 6 kind of fighting for those slots, though Houston can't mess up too bad on the other end. They're only a game and a half of Dallas for the seventh slot. So they do have a shot, if they don't play well, to fall backward. But usually in that 3-6 area, they'll be able to decide where what order that's going to be and who plays who in the first round. But certainly you look at how this has hurt and or helped, and we've seen plenty that have hurt from players that have been out, players that opted out, players that have been injured, players that have tested positive. How cohesive has the team been? Maybe the most important thing here is the fact that this small ball team has had a chance to kind of recharge before the start or the restart of the season.
It seems all too appropriate that this might finally be a year for the team that majors in isolation basketball to come out and finally have their way, considering the theme of the entire year has been isolation from everything and everyone in this spot. But joking aside in that one, and I'm glad that landed with you guys. This is one where, you know, and we heard it from Tim there, James Harden and the criticism of his style has always been when you get to this point, you can fall victim to stretches like we saw in the Western Conference Finals right. Where you go 0-4, and whether that's just, you know, statistical anomalies or whether it's you're actually gassed in that process, you've got a guy in James Harden who is going to be as ball dominant as anyone. They were second in the NBA in points per game and 29th in assists per game.
Right.
Like, this is what they do. And when you've got one player that plays like he's holding down turbo on the video game controller and Russell Westbrook the entire time, and another one in Harden who's going to pound the air out of the ball in that situation, the fresh legs are going to be the biggest benefit, provided they've stayed in shape. And we saw some images that looked like James Harden was a guy
right. That
took that pretty seriously. We know Russ had to deal with the COVID case on the way back into this. And so you hope that there's certainly no ramifications than that he's in line with the majority who have come and gone with that virus and been healthy on the other side. Because really, that simplified process, the toughest part coming back is going to be what everyone said, the flow of a team. It's a lot easier to get in sync when the flow of your team is just give one of the two guys that hoisted the MVP the basketball
right. And
let them ride.
Yeah, a couple of other things about the NBA bubble. It looks like Zion, who had an excused absence, went out
right. Had
to be quarantined. Pelicans Executive VP of Operations David Griffin says he expects Zion to join the team back in practice tomorrow, which would be Wednesday, mm-hmm. As they get set for the revamp of the season coming up at the end of this week. Then, of course, Lou Williams, who went to I'm learning so much more about the Wings at Magic City. It's really phenomenal.
So I saw a picture of them?
Yes.
Yo.
Yeah.
There was a picture of them that surfaced yesterday. I got to say,
rock solid.
I get it.
Yeah.
Like, these look, I mean, they look incredible. Like, just the visual on the screen, I felt like I could taste them.
I'm going to need to try some of these.
Like, how do we get, like, do they, like,
they get them in the champagne room, which I can book for you guys.
If we're not there, we're saying, do they deliver? Like, but you got to wonder.
Yeah, like, those aren't going to hold up well in transit.
No,
they look
a
little
moist. I think that's the thing. Like, yeah, you don't want to wait 2 days to get
them. Yeah.
That being said, if there is a possibility, because we're talking about a time right now where solutions are the goal, I'm willing to work with Magic City on a solution to get us these wins.
Yeah,
how great of you. What a wonderful thing.
Listen,
that is
for you. It's just what we have to be about right now.
We're about putting our time in. Listen, we weren't top picks, okay?
Yeah.
We were toward the end or not even at all. So
yes.
We have learned to work very hard.
Find a way.
To research and watch film and do what needs to be done. And if it means to sample Magic City Wings, then so be it.
Well, again,
we're willing to make that sacrifice. That's the kind of guys we are.
The reason I brought it up is Lou Williams went to Twitter yesterday to sort of clarify his situation and say, look, I went, got some food, man. Basically, you know, I went out to say my final respects to someone who had passed, and I stopped in to get some food, so everybody just chill the bleep out.
It's always amazing is if there was no picture, we probably wouldn't be discussing this right now.
As your generation says, picks or it didn't happen.
Well, they have found a way to do that there. And while Lou Will was there, he had some back and forth with Kendrick Perkins around here, which, I mean, seems par for the course with Perk. Perk comes out, strong take on an NBA player. And no one holds back in those. Montrezl Harrell, I think, came out in defense of Lou Williams as well, too, on that one.
Well, yeah, because Perk basically said it's amazing Zion Williamson acted more mature outside the bubble than the veteran Lou Williams, to which Lou Will said, that's the one thing he got on me, 50 and 13 or whatever years in the league, is I went and got some food.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, stop it. And then he's like, and when we see each other, don't play the, oh, it's just TV thing with me.
Yeah. Perk is one of those guys, like the when we see each other card, like, that's hard to play with Perk. Like, that's a very large man who spends his time hunting hogs. Like, I don't know if he's worried about any in-person confrontation.
I don't think he is. And let's give a bit of good news, you know, outside the bubble. Kyrie Irving has donated $1.5 million to the WNBA players opting out of the season, going to help with those salaries. He basically said the funds will come from the KAI Empowerment Initiative that Irving launched on Monday. To be eligible for Irving's program, WNBA players must give insight to their decision and not be receiving salaries from any other entity. So he's giving money to help those that are deciding to opt out.
Good for him.
Yep, absolutely.
So we're getting set for the start or the restart of the regular season in the NBA, but we are getting ready for training camps to open today in the NFL. And what has the NFL learned from what we've seen from every other sport? Or is it still that gif from Samuel L. Jackson in Jurassic Park? Hold on to your butts. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2.
My bros this weekend. Me and my bros are going to hang.
It's Golic and Wingo.
What was that?
I don't know. You always hear those coming back. You have no idea what the context is.
That's the worst part about this, is that they'll play some of that. I'm like, I never said that.
Yeah.
There's no way I
said
that.
And we did. We'd obviously said it.
With no context.
No idea what context we said it in.
No context, Golic and Wingo would be a great follow on Twitter, because I feel like if you took a lot of our stuff on, even in context, sometimes we sound ridiculous. Out of context, look out.
Yeah, I think that would be a
I think, you know, in doing this for 22 years, and again, this is all ending on Friday, I wonder how many years it'll stick with me that people throw stuff back in my face of saying the dumb stuff that I said that I don't remember saying.
There's only one way to find out.
You know what? Like, true. Do you feel like at this point, because you have a pretty diverse catalog in a lot of this when it comes to that, but do you feel like now, sort of like when an actor finds a great role that they become super well known for in all of this, do you worry that that's going to happen with you and the Patrick Mahomes take? Recency bias built into that, it being such a flop in that. Are you worried that that might be the one that defines you, sort of the way that like Walter White would define, Bryan Cranston?
I think...
You know, the Walter White guy.
That was my most off take there was.
You went strong, though.
No, and to be fair, you know, I don't know if many people expected what he did.
Yeah.
Let's 50 touchdowns.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, let's be honest. But I certainly was wrong, just as I was right about the Alex Smith, Aaron Rodgers draft, when I said Aaron Rodgers should be number one without question in that one.
We need to find that and start playing that one.
That is true.
Everybody, you know what? That's not as recent, so people don't remember that one as much.
We need to start going out for the show. We need to bring that take back, get it back out there in the ether.
Yeah, how about it? Kind of roll that in. Cliff, could you? Yeah, Cliff's not doing that for me.
Good luck with that. So speaking of good luck, we're going to need a lot of good luck going forward as NFL training camps are opening today, and obviously everyone in the sports world is reacting to what we saw in baseball from the Marlins outbreak with COVID-19. So for more on that and all things related NFL, delighted to be joined by the outstanding ESPN NFL insider, ladies and gentlemen, none other than Adam Schefter. Adam, good morning. Thanks for being with us. What can you tell us about what the NFL is doing or is learning from watching the outbreak that happened with the Marlins over the weekend?
Well, let me just say this. First of all, what an honor to be on this week in Mike's farewell week. And I went through this the last time I was on not knowing that I had this appearance, but I just want to congratulate Mike on an unbelievable run. And I can only imagine how emotional it's going to be. Before I answer your question, I want to ask Mike how emotional this week is going to be for you, Mike.
You know what? Right now, it's not been. I mean, I'm sure maybe by Friday, you know, when the last day is here and there is the thought that it truly is going to be over, there might be some emotion. I guess it's less emotional, Shefty, and more memories. You know, you start to think about all the things in the past, way back when I started this with Tony Bruno, of different things that we did starting in just one market in Chicago, you know, and this thing building to whatever it is now, 300, 400, some affiliates. I think right now it's more that, more memories. And a lot of those memories, my friend, are with you. There's no doubt about that. As I told Buster, I always appreciate those that come on and get the show. And you've always played along with our antics over the years. And we're more than just this NFL insider. You know, you were a true friend of the show. And I do appreciate that, because it certainly helps with the show and being where the show has gone over the years.
Well, it was an honor, and I congratulate you and salute you, and hope the week turns out to be an emotional ride that is something that you always remember. Now, to answer Trey's question, I just think that football has set up its own rules, and everybody's aware of what's going on in baseball. And I don't think it's necessarily the same thing. I think baseball was always going to have certain challenges. Every sport is going to have certain challenges. Our world has challenges that it would have to overcome. And football is a little bit different. But what's interesting to me is that, again, if you go back to the plan that the two sides passed on Friday night, you know, one of the things that the NFL put in there is that players can't go out at night. They can't gather in bars. They can't go to large religious services. They can't do many of the things that people are discouraged from doing in today's world, or they'll face discipline. And so I think that it's a situation where the league has looked out and come up with these rules, and you hope for the best. And the other thing is that in talking to a bunch of coaches, front office members all summer long, they were pessimistic. And now, from some of those same people, I actually hear some cautious optimism, which I'm a little surprised about, because we've got it spiking all over the country. And it's a situation where, at a time where there are so many cases in so many places and so much hospitalization, so much sadness, football is just rolling on. And you talked about camps opening today, Trey. Yeah, they opened today. I mean, players report. But this isn't camp opening. I mean, the way we know it. You know, usually they roll in and everyone's getting ready and they're on the field the next day, and we're talking about positional bat. And there's just none of that this summer, because it's not relevant, because it's 8 days of double testing on COVID and quarantining and making sure you don't have it, and then 3 weeks of conditioning work and then 2 weeks of practice. And if we go through all that, then we get football when it's supposed to open. But the league is moving forward as if, you know, this is not going to be an issue.
You know, Adam, there are guidelines and protocols each sport has set up, some are certainly overlapping and some being a little bit different. I would imagine, and I guess talk me out of it, after seeing, and you'd have to be foolish not to look at what's happening in baseball, another outdoor sport where they're traveling, why would the NFL not, one of the first possible changes to make is said, you know what, we're just forgetting the 2 weeks of everyday testing, we're just going to everyday test throughout the season?
Say that one more time, Mike. Repeat that.
Why wouldn't the NFL just change their policy and say, we're going to test every single day throughout the season? We don't care about the 5% or not, after seeing what happened in baseball.
Well, maybe they will. Look, this is such a fluid thing. And there was a battle over it. And players wanted tests every day. And where they came in was they tested for 2 weeks every day. And then if the transmission rates are below a certain percentage, then they go to every other day. The only thing I could say is that there's going to be a ton of testing, period, whether it's daily in the beginning or every other day. And so we go from there. Yesterday I had Thomas Morstead on my podcast. He's a member of the NFLPA Executive Committee. And, yep. And he talked about the concern of taking away tests from the public. But he's like, look, we've hired a private company here to do this. And they're spending a lot of money on testing. And so the NFL has forged ahead with doing this its own way. And that's the situation, basically, that they're going to do a ton of testing. I don't know that it's going to be every day. It will be in the beginning. But that's how you start out with the players. It's two tests. It's one test. Like, they report today, test it, go home, stay at home, come back in a few days, test it again. And assuming that both tests are negative, then you could start conditioning work. And if they aren't negative, then you get put on the COVID-19 list.
And I think we're already seeing that at work in a number of places. The Minnesota Vikings have been the ones dealing with it the most. They had a trainer test positive, 4 players placed on the reserved COVID list there. What's the tone or tenor around that organization right now, as they appear to be the first one really dealing with it in a meaningful way like this?
You have to say it one more time. I'm just texting a couple of things. There's a couple of things going on, Mike. I apologize. Oh,
No problem. Yeah. I understand there's news always getting ready to break, Adam. I understand that. Just the tone and tenor around the Vikings organization right now.
Oh, yeah.
Some guys going on the COVID reserve list there. Certainly their trainer testing positive was big news. What the mood is around that building?
Well, that's interesting, right? Because I think from a big picture, that's got to be highly alarming, that your head trainer, the man that's in charge of infectious disease in your building, has got COVID. Now, the way it was explained to me is his kids have been very busy this summer, living their lives, as you hope kids can do. And they believe that he got it from one of his kids. And there were 4 Vikings rookies that were placed on the reserve COVID list yesterday. And they told me that they had no contact, zero, with Eric Sugarman. Like, they weren't even in the building with him. And so, again, everyone's trying to figure it all out. I think from a big picture, yeah, you have to be concerned. The trainer's got it. If he can't avoid it, how can everybody else avoid it?
Yeah.
But from a small picture, they don't believe it's related. And so it's a case where, they're going to continue to do the best they can. Look, this is just new for everybody. Everybody's trying to figure it out. And so they're going to be without their head trainer early on while all this testing goes on. And my understanding is he's doing pretty well right now. And that just goes to show you how simple the transmission can be. And if the head trainer can get it, then anybody can get it, because you think that guy is smarter and more careful than anybody.
Yeah, well, there's no question about that. Listen, we're starting the grand experiment right now. The runway, we've always said the runway for the NFL has been the longest. Well, guess what? We're approaching takeoff.
Absolutely.
And we're about to see how much turbulence there will be as we begin the flight. Adam, we appreciate time this morning. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a great one. Be well, Mike.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate that. And he's so right about, the beginning of camp, something we've both gone through, Mike, is you go there, and I mean, the butterflies are going, the anticipation is going, you're checking your pads, making sure everything's right, you're not going out on them right away, but obviously the helmet, and you're ready to get into football right away. Now, as Adam said, you get tested, you go home for a couple of days. You get tested, you go home. It's kind of a hurry up and wait. You get there, the anticipation, then you wait before you even get on the field to do anything.
It's so strange. And this is probably the longest these guys have gone without seeing teammates consistently in their entire football lives. Like, especially since they started playing in high school and college, where it becomes a more year-round game and all this. And now you're going to get back in the building and you're going to be told, you've got to stay away. You've got to avoid what baseball's seen, which is, the dog piles and guys high-fiving and stuff like that. And, oh, by the way, one of the other situations, a trainer being out in this all of a sudden. And it's like we've heard from coaches. What happens if your offensive coordinator gets it? And someone else has to run the meeting. Team's going to be doing practices where all of a sudden they have their head coach not come for a day and someone else has to take over. All these different things where now the trainer, who's pretty central to this entire process, is going to be one dealing with it. It shows you all the different scenarios you've got to
prepare
for. You know
what's going to be weird is just along those lines, going in every day and looking around who's not there.
Yeah.
You're going around, you get in.
Which is already a training camp thing.
It really is.
Usually a week or two into it.
For a different reason. Now you're looking around going, Where's this person? Where's that person? And if they're not there, you're going to just assume that, either through contact tracing or they tested positive or whatever, that they're being quarantined.
So, again, the grand experiment is now underway in the NFL, and we'll see what happens going forward. But coming up, someone who went from the front lines of the NFL to the front lines in the fight against COVID, and what does he think of the NFL's prospects for the season? We will get into that with one of the most learned minds we've had on this show after the SportsCenter update. All right, Golic and Wingo here with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest, who was a high-level college football athlete, put his college and potentially NFL career on hold to go be a Rhodes Scholar. Sounds like a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Still played a few years for the Tennessee Titans and is now doing a great job as a neurosurgeon, and he's been very involved in the COVID-19 outbreak from the beginning because he works in Boston, where it was one of the hardest cities hit when the COVID-19 pandemic first broke out. We've had a couple of chances to talk to him in and around the NFL draft, and we're delighted to talk to him again. Dr. Myron Roll is with us, former NFL DB and a neurosurgeon. Dr. Roll, thanks so much for being with us again. We appreciate your time this morning. We're sort of seeing this play out in real time, these sports trying to get back and going during a pandemic. The NFL's about to start. The Major League Baseball has returned, and we've seen an outbreak. Where are you on how these sports are handling the idea of playing athletic events in the middle of a pandemic?
Well, thanks for having me again, guys. It's always a pleasure. And I think that the leagues, especially the NFL, trying to be very creative and innovative and finding ways to get these sports back on the books. We all love sports. We have loved them. I played in the NFL, and I have cousins from Samari and Antrell role played. And frankly, the NFL helped pay for my medical school, right? So, I owe a lot to it, and there's no question about it. But at the same time, when you have a pandemic and infection rates still rising, hospitalizations still occurring, PPE resources still being in high demand, and you know, the country really on edge with a lot of uncertainty from the normal citizenry, just uncertain how things will go. Community with really uncertainty in the sense of how do different people respond to A, treatments, B, just being, you know, persistently hospitalized, and C, you know, when they've recovered, you know, are we fully through with the virus in that sense? So without a lot of statistical data, without more sort of research to understand the trajectory and the trend of this disease, you know, I think it's very dangerous and in ways irresponsible to continue some of these leagues and trying to sort of experiment with these athletes and these staff managers and equipment managers and other people involved to say, well, we have a few cases here, but we're going to, you know, rely on these quick detecting early symptom technology and advanced testing to sort of figure this out. But yeah, I just think it's a very ambitious and somewhat dangerous proposition.
I don't think you are alone in that thought, but they are going to try and do this. So now that we know they're trying to do this and they're reporting to camps, in your mind, what are the absolute musts, the few musts that they have to do if they want to have any chance of getting a season off at all?
I think the absolute must are being very transparent with their data, being transparent with, you know, how many infections they have. You know, if you have three negative tests, and then one positive test on a player, you know, I wouldn't consider that a win just because there was three negatives. So that one positive is the issue, right? And then also, you know, making sure that you absolutely get the opinion and the advice and, you know, seek the knowledge and insight of independent parties, epidemiologists, and anesthesiologists, intensivists, people who have worked on the front line of COVID patients in the hospital and research settings. So that they're able to give, you know, valuable contributions to what's happening, right? If you want a league to start, your agenda may be so narrow focused on just getting the games going, regardless of what happens, you know, with testing and how players may be ill or whatever the case may be positive. But if you have another group that you give true, essential, and real authority to say, you know what, we're going to halt this. This is too much. You know, four cases is considered a pandemic in epidemiology terms. Or eight cases is considered a an outbreak or whatever the case may be. You know, listen to these folks and give them a real voice, and listen to the players as well. I think that needs to be an absolute thing that happens, because if you want to treat these players not like commodities, you need to give them a voice in all aspects of the sport, not just with Black Lives Matter or breast cancer awareness or domestic violence or these other initiatives that you push into the community. Give them a voice here as well. If they're unsafe, then listen to that and take that into heavy consideration.
Dr. Myron Roll with us here on Golic and Wingo. And, Doctor, I guess to that extent, there was also the negative side of listening too much to the players in Major League Baseball. We've seen in a couple instances the Marlins, who had a rash of positive tests on part of their last trip. Part of the reason they played despite a number of known positive tests was because the players decided amongst themselves that that was something that they still wanted to do. Major League Baseball ends up canceling or postponing their next couple of games in addition to another game that was supposed to be played in that same stadium. Based on that response that you've seen and the commotion around Major League Baseball, is it paramount that there is someone else inside these leagues making the decisions about who gets on the field and when it comes to this?
Well, I absolutely. I think that, you know, the people who, again, I'm a neurosurgery guy, do brains, I do spines, tumors, you know, things of that nature. And I just was sort of redeployed as being a COVID-19 physician with Influx in Boston. But, you know, there are amazing women and men who have, A, collected data, B, worked directly with COVID patients, and C, can give, you know, real profound insight and really have no tie or no, you know, ambition to see, you know, many homers hit or, you know, bases stolen or ERAs down to, you know, some remarkable number. They just really want to see the safety of the country and of these men and women who are part of these leagues be at a premium. So, you know, I believe that if you have a virus right now that we've seen been able to be curbed, at least in New York, New Jersey, Boston, where I am, by, you know, certain measures, you know, being implemented, then I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for it to happen again. But it's going to take a collective effort. And if there's leagues that are saying, you know what, we're just going to work and isolate in a silo and separate and apart as a different entity than the rest of the fabric of America and rest of what's happening, especially playing in these hotbed states or taking players from these hotbed states or traveling in these hotbed states, and having fans who are from these hotbed states. I mean, it's very difficult. It places the players in a very, very hard position when trying to think about, okay, do I need to, you know, look up the number two receiver when I'm on cover two deep pass, or should I think about, man, am I going to bring this infection to my family when I go home because I'm just not sure if I'm safe playing right now? These are decisions that shouldn't be made by these athletes who are going out there and trying to play a very, very difficult sport.
Yeah, we've talked about that, especially with the concussion protocols in the NFL. They take the helmet away from the player, so it's not up to them. And, of course, as we brought up earlier, you can't transmit a concussion. You can transmit this virus and this disease, as Dr. Myron Roll was with us. So we heard from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred in an interview yesterday when he said the outbreak, which was up to 11 players of the Marlins, he didn't believe that was a nightmare scenario for shutting down that team or shutting down the sport. In your learned opinion, is there a number that you think when it comes to players on a certain team or a number of teams that would say, okay, guys, this isn't working and we need to pull the plug here?
So I don't have a specific number. I would say if you have a cluster of cases, then that needs to be seriously looked at. If you have a group of players who have been in one area, one location, one locker room, then that needs to be investigated. And everybody in that area needs to be tested as well. Everyone has been in contact with them. And allow the process to take its time, rather than saying, we're just going to postpone, one game, two games. Treat this as if this was a person who was tested positive in a bank, in a community bank somewhere in Nebraska. Or, tested positive in one office building in downtown Boston, Massachusetts. If that were the case, you wouldn't shut down production for just 2 days and say, okay, let's get back to it. No, you would take the slow measures, the slow precautions to make sure that everything is okay. Because the worst thing here is that if you get one of these players testing positive, and God forbid, they decompensate very quickly and have to be treated with acute care in some hospitalized setting, and you say to yourself, well, was it really worth it to really rush back and not take the necessary slow precautions, go low and slow to figure out if this thing is okay and this thing is safe. I think all of us would say, no, that's a terrible scenario. We would certainly like to avoid that. So do everything you can to avoid it.
Absolutely. And again, you mentioned it. There are certain precautions you can take, and it has been proven, whether it's in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Boston, where you are, Massachusetts, simple steps that we can all use to help slow the spread of this disease if we want these sports to be played when we want them to be played. Myron, we said this at the draft. We said it after the draft. We'll say it again. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you for what you've done at Mass General, which is out of your area of expertise of medicine. And thank you for taking the time and sharing some of your insights with us this morning. We absolutely appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Myron.
No worries. Well, we're getting closer and closer to football in some way, shape, or form coming back, and maybe the biggest name yet has decided, I'm going to take a pass on playing in 2020. We will get to that after this.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Get you caught up on a little bit of what's trending. In UFC, Dana White told ESPN's Brett Okamoto that he is open to Khabib Nurmagomedov picking his final opponent. If Nurmagomedov, who's 28-0, attempts to retire with a professional record of 30-0, White said he'd support his choice of final opponent, including former welterweight and middleweight champion George St. Pierre. Should Nurmagomedov defeat Justin Gaethje, he would improve to 29-0, and his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, recently told UFC Arabia that Nurmagomedov would then go for 30-0 before retirement. During his retirement announcement, St. Pierre revealed that there were talks for the super fight, but the UFC ended up going in another direction, so something to keep an eye on there. Meanwhile, in the NBA, Kyrie Irving is committing $1.5 million to supplement the income of WNBA players who chose not to play this season, either for coronavirus concerns or for social justice reasons. The funds are going to come from the KAI Empowerment Initiative that Irving launched on Monday. To be eligible for the program, WNBA players must give insight into their decisions and not be receiving salaries from any other entity. And in the NFL, New York Jets general manager Joe Douglas said safety Jamal Adams' outspokenness had no impact on their decision to trade him to the Seahawks. At the same time, Douglas took umbrage with one of Adams' claims. Quote, I want to make it clear, I never promised an offer to Jamal or his agent, nor was I ever dishonest with my communications with their camp, he said Monday in a press conference with reporters. What's Trending is brought to you by Redbox. Red Scoob at Redbox tonight. Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, and Mystery Inc. discover the Soupy's secret legacy could be the key to stopping a global dogpocalypse. Visit Redbox.com for all the ways to watch.
Does anybody believe Joe Thomas?
You mean Joe Douglas? I always believe Joe Thomas.
Did well in the Titan game.
Yes, he did. Yeah, I can say always believe job. A Titan. Yeah. But Joe Douglas, nah, not so much.
Yeah, I don't think I
believe him. I don't believe.
We can like the guy all we want. It has nothing to do with whether we like him or not. But so we're to believe if Jamal Adams never talked about a trade or never said he wanted out that he'd be traded right now?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So. But listen, kudos to him. Couple of number ones and Bradley McDougal as a starter. That's a pretty good
exchange. Coming back, without question.
You don't got to lie to kick it. You got a bunch of stuff back for a disgruntled guy.
That's exactly right.
It's not a precedent going forward. You hope that your best player is not always going to be this disgruntled.
The head coach of the team you're the GM for did this in Miami. When guys were disgruntled, they were traded away. So it's not like, you know, oh, yeah, these players didn't do this because they were – yeah, it was part of it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying that.
Yeah, no question. All right, so we just had Adam Schefter on, and he was getting a bunch of texts while he was talking to us, and now we know what the texts were as he just broke the story that Patriots three-time Super Bowl champ and Pro Bowl inside linebacker Dante Hightower has decided to opt out of the 2020 season. And this is significant. Hightower was scheduled to make $8 million in base salary. Instead, he's going to make $150,000. He just had a baby on July 16th and told teammates Devin and Jason McCourty on their Double Coverage podcast this week, I don't have any words to describe it, asking what he's looking forward to and expect. It was there and then some in terms of having the baby. So he has decided to opt out. And this is significant for a couple of reasons. Number one, this might be... Look, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif was a starting guard for the Chiefs.
Right.
He's a medical doctor, so good for him and all that kind of stuff. This is by far the biggest high-profile
good
name.
Good for him and all that
kind of
stuff.
No, I'm just saying good in what he's going to do.
I know.
That was phrased clumsily. What I'm trying to say is, in terms of football impact, this is by far the biggest name and the best player who's decided not to play in 2020.
Though I will say, there's another... This, according to ESPN.com, this is the ninth player to opt out from the Patriots.
Well, four from the Patriots, and also remember, their defensive side, which was their best side of the football game last season, has been decimated by losses. Jamie Collins, Kyle Van Noy, Danny Shelton, Nate Ebner, they have all left, and now arguably, outside of Stephon Gilmore of the McCourties, their best defensive player is not going to be playing this year.
Yeah, the others, Danny Vitale, who was looking to take over that fullback slot there, Najee Torin, I believe an offensive lineman, but Marcus Cannon overcame non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when he was drafted in 2011. So he's at risk. An offensive tackle, a guy they definitely would be counting on that offensive line. So a big cog in on the offense and certainly one on the defense as well.
Because remember, an offensive line that is looking to get David Andrews back but also is dealing with the loss of Dante Scarnecchia, their longtime all-world offensive line coach that has made such a tangible difference at times for them there. You have to wonder if they regret signing Cam Newton now because they've set up perfectly for the tank that I always had in mind for them.
Oh, stop it.
I'm just saying, you would have been in a perfect spot right now to look at this and say, you know what? And instead, Cam Newton might win you a few more. He might pull the Ryan Fitzpatrick on you this year.
So, again, for those who don't know what was agreed to, if you are not at high risk and you choose to opt out, you get $150,000 and the year does not count for you toward – you know, accrued seasons. If you are high risk, a guy like Marcus Cannon, who, as I said, overcame cancer in 2011 when he was drafted, though if you're at high risk, you get $350,000 if you opt out, and it counts as an accrued season for you. And then you start up with what your contract would be next year.
And for Dante Hightower, because this was the last year of his deal, he was scheduled to make $8 million. That all bumps to next year now.
Right.
So his deal will toll for the 2021 season in that regard there. So all that taken care of, but it underscores a lot of the, I think, things that guys are considering, what their family is going through right now, their personal history. And for so many of these guys, I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of all this stuff. And so you're going to see names that pop up that probably surprise you over the next week because because remember,
they signed
on Monday that deal and agreement, and players had a week to declare if they were going to opt out for the season. So we're barely halfway through the week, and we've already had this many announcements. I'm sure there are guys that are still
kind of working
through a lot of their decision-making.
And understand the financial ramifications here. It is much easier for a guy like David Price to opt out of his $11 million contract with the Dodgers this year because he has 4 years left on a contract that pays him over $14 million completely guaranteed. That is not the case for most NFL players. So this is a real financial decision that he is willing to walk away from because of things that he considers are way more important than football right now. So we'll see how many more other players go down that road as we continue to get closer and closer to the return of football. Stay with us. Golic and Wingo.